Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the Everything Pup podcast. I'm your host, Holly Montgomery. Does your dog start to pant or pace while you're getting ready for work? Or do they bark and destroy the house once you've gone? If so, he may have separation anxiety. Now, this particular topic hits really close to home for me as I have a dog with separation anxiety. And to say he's made our lives a little challenging is an understatement. Grizz has not spent any time alone since we had a major incident involving some rather extensive damage to our home. If this all sounds too familiar, you're going to want to listen to this episode featuring my guest, Dre Baker. Dre is the owner and trainer at Dogwit Training in Calgary, Alberta. She specializes in separation anxiety and leash reactivity and is a certified SA Pro trainer. Separation anxiety is a really complex issue that can't be tackled in just one episode, but today we'll touch on what exactly it is and how to know if your dog might be struggling from it. And with that, let's get on with the episode.
You're listening to the Everything Pup Podcast, the place for dedicated pup parents to find valuable dog-centric tips, interviews with trusted industry experts and your favorite dog brands, and everything else you need to become an informed advocate for your best friend. Now, here's your host, Holly Montgomery.
Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to introduce you all to today's guest, Dre Baker, who's a dog trainer in Calgary at Dogwit Training. She specializes in separation anxiety training and is going to help us understand a little bit more about this complex topic today. Welcome to the show, Dre.
Thank you so much. Hi, Holly.
Hi. All right. Well, this is a massive topic, and I know that we're not going to touch on everything today, but I really wanted to use today's episode to kind of just give people a little bit of knowledge on what separation anxiety is and maybe give them some tools to know how to identify if maybe one of their dogs is going through something like this and a little bit about how we can help and kind of where we can go from there. So I think you're the perfect person to have on for this. And we've talked about this before, but I have a dog with separation anxiety. So I've got lots to relate to this topic as well. So it's going to be a good episode. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Awesome. Okay. So I'm going to start with the very most basic question. What exactly is separation anxiety?
And it's such a good question. So separation anxiety is essentially the fear of being alone or phobia of being alone. And technically, separation anxiety would refer to a dog who's fearful of being apart from a specific person. Usually when we talk about separation anxiety, what we're really referring to is isolation distress. And isolation distress is that general fear of being alone or phobia when they're alone. And it's a pretty severe behavior where we can kind of look at it as a behavior emergency or a behavior crisis where this dog is actually panicking because there's no one else home with them. These dogs are truly suffering when they're experiencing this.
So you'd mentioned the kind of the word phobia in there. Would that be kind of like the human equivalent of like a panic attack or something like that?
That's exactly it. It is a panic attack when the dogs are alone.
Oh, that's so sad because I've actually had panic attacks before myself. And I know that it's a pretty, it's out of your control. It's not something that someone could just come in and say, hey, stop doing that. Or here, have a candy or something that makes you happy to kind of get you out of that mindset. And it doesn't really work that way. In fact, it's very helpful to have somebody around to kind of talk you through it. So I can kind of see how an animal or a dog alone going through something like this could be very, very scared. And would you see any signs that a dog might have separation anxiety, like either before you're leaving the house or maybe when you get home? Are there any things that people can look for?
Yeah, you might see signs when you're getting ready that your dog is starting to get anxious. Maybe they're pacing a little bit or just look worried. Maybe they're really sticking to your side where they don't want to let you out of their sight as you're starting to get ready. Often dogs will pick up on those cues that indicate that you're going somewhere. So if, especially in recent years where we all just live in sweatpants and we put on fancy pants, well, that could really be an indication that something's going on. So if you start to see that your dog is looking anxious, looking worried, or just behaving differently as you're starting to get ready to go, that could be an indication that they might struggle when you're actually gone. When you come home, sometimes you might know that your dog struggled while they're alone. Sometimes you might not. It all depends on how that fear sort of presents for that dog. And it's kind of interesting because it absolutely means that we might have way more dogs with separation anxiety out there than we know, because we might not have any obvious signs when we get home that they were struggling when we were gone.
Because I know, and we'll talk about this later, but I know there can be some pretty obvious signs when you get home, and I'll share my experience when we get to that. But so if you see your dog kind of having these, I guess I would consider, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but would you consider those worried looks and maybe the pacing and sticking to you closer, would those be kind of the minor or the beginning stages, do you think? Is there anything that people could kind of do to maybe start working on them or making their dog a little more comfortable at that stage?
I would say that usually those signs would indicate that the dog has already experienced fear or panic during an absence, and they've just learned to associate those getting ready behaviors with the thing that's about to happen, which is the scary thing, which they've already experienced. So I think if someone were to notice those types of behaviors as they're getting ready, that it would likely just be a good indication that they need to pay attention and maybe do a little bit of digging to see, what does my dog experience when I'm gone? And so that they can really see, is this linked? Are these little behaviors that I'm seeing and these worried looks that I'm seeing as I'm getting ready, are they because my dog knows something scary is about to happen? So we wouldn't typically see those behaviors as like separation anxiety light, you know, yeah, right. Where they would be indicators that your dog has experienced that scary time already and understands what typically predicts it.
So could it be just one scary experience that they had, or could it be something that happens like every single day? Like, what might be some examples of things that could have potentially got them to that point?
Yeah, it's such an interesting question, because truly, we don't know what causes separation anxiety. There's a lot of theories about what, you know, it might be. Could it have been a scary experience while they were alone? Totally possible. Could it have been something that they learned in early puppyhood? Maybe. You know, there's some theories that there's a genetic component as well. And, you know, with all of these theories, there's nothing that we can totally go, oh, yes, this is what causes separation anxiety. We really don't know for sure.
Because you can even have a dog, like my example is my dog that's got separation anxiety is 10 years old now and didn't have any signs or symptoms until he was 7. So this can even be something that they don't necessarily have it, or they don't have you were saying they might have a genetic kind of predisposition to it, but you could get through your dogs most of their life and be like, phew, I dodged that bullet. And then all of a sudden, boom, no, you didn't. Here's another test for you, Holly. You need to learn how to deal with this.
It can come out, you know, at any point, which is really interesting. And I think that even contributes to us not really understanding what it is that causes it, where some dogs at a really young age, we see it right from the start. Some just all of a sudden seem to develop it, or maybe it's all of a sudden we notice a very outward sign of it. Maybe it was there all along and we just didn't see it. In my own dog, we saw separation anxiety develop as well at a really late age. He was 14 when we saw it come in. And with that, there's some factors like cognitive decline and things like that that contributed to it. So it really can come in any time, and or at least we can notice it anytime.
So maybe one of the best things we can do, and maybe this podcast will help, is just help people, pup owners, just help them kind of learn to maybe see the signs or start looking, you know, just pay attention. And maybe there's something they didn't know and it's been going on for years. And now they've got a few kind of ideas and little things they can look for, which can really help them maybe with a dog that's struggling. So I think it's really good that we're having this talk, because in our pet store, we have definitely seen a massive increase in separation anxiety in the last few years. And I'm assuming that's due to COVID. That's due to people being home. But what's your take on that? Do you think there's any relationship with that whole situation and the increase in separation anxiety?
So I think it's really interesting, the effect of COVID and separation anxiety. Right when COVID first kind of came in, we really started having a lot of conversations about how will this affect dogs? How will this affect separation anxiety? And I think that it absolutely has, but maybe not to the degree that we initially thought. And so I think that dogs who pre-COVID did really well with alone time, didn't have any struggles with it, I think those guys, for the most part, have the ability to bounce back fairly easily, where they can make that adjustment back into alone time. Some dogs, of course, might have, maybe it is that genetic predisposition where this not having any alone time kind of turns on that genetic marker, and then we start to see the struggles post-COVID. And we've seen a little bit of that, but not as much as I thought that we were going to. One of the things that is also kind of COVID related is that we have a really huge generation of the COVID puppies and the COVID dogs who have come into the world and into families, but haven't experienced the alone time. So they don't have the pre-COVID, totally cool alone experience like some of the other dogs. And for those guys, I think that we still have a lot of discovering to see if it does have a huge impact. I think that we're seeing a little bit more of separation anxiety, not necessarily because COVID made it, but because COVID has started us talking about it. And people have such a greater awareness that dogs might be experiencing separation anxiety because they haven't been alone. So I don't know if that's the case, that they are experiencing it because they haven't been alone, or if it's just that the general population of dog guardians has a good understanding of separation anxiety is a thing. Maybe my dog isn't comfortable alone. Maybe I should really check in with them and see how they're feeling alone. So I'm not sure which it is, if COVID is kind of a causation of increased separation anxiety, or if we just have so much more awareness. And I really, really hope it's the latter, where awareness is so good on this topic.
I do too. And actually, that's really encouraging, because I kind of had thought or heard that there was going to be a lot of fallout. And this is about the time it would happen, because I think it was in the first 6 months or so of the pandemic that most people were like, hey, this is the perfect time to go get a dog. So we saw just the general population of pet dogs just kind of soar up a little bit. So even if there was perhaps an increase in cases, was it because there was an increase of pet dog owners? Who knows? But you're right, there's more time to kind of discover this, and some people are just going back to work now. So, I mean, some people have been home for this whole time. So it remains to be seen. It really is. And actually, I'm really happy that you shared that, because that makes me feel better that maybe there's not as many dogs out there suffering as we thought. So now we can kind of focus on those handful that are. And I mean, COVID had nothing to do with mine. I don't know what it was. But we only left him at home for a few hours here and there, and it was nothing new. My lifestyle didn't change because I was in retail. So we're still going to work every single day. There was no working from home, none of that. So who knows? But that's kind of going to help us segue into the next question, because the reason I discovered that my dog Grizz had separation anxiety was because every day when I left home, I would give him a frozen Kong. And for a few days, he didn't touch it until we got home. And I'm like, this is weird. And I know this is a sign, because dogs, when they're stressed or they're anxious, they don't sometimes won't eat. And that's pretty common sign. So I thought, this is a little strange, but whatever. That's all I'm really noticing. So I'm going to go to work. And then we came home to an absolutely destroyed door frame, the door that was leading from the house to the garage, the attached garage. And it was ripped off. And this is my gentle older boy that never gave me a problem his entire life. And I'm like, what the heck? So after you get over the initial, I'm angry, you wrecked my house, then you're like, what made you so upset that you needed to try to literally rip the door down to get out of the house? Like, and then you're in tears because you're like, what can I do? So if a person should come home to a situation like that, I'll first recommend, please take a deep breath before you do anything. But what is the best way to greet your dog when you've come home to a situation like that?
Absolutely. I mean, you come home and you see pieces of your home chewed apart or ripped up. There's some really big emotions that happen. And, you know, as calm as we might be normally, it's really hard not to have some sort of an initial response to that. So I agree. Deep breath. Absolutely. And I mean, it's important to keep in mind that chances are pretty good your dog didn't do this just to be a butthead, right? They did this because there was something really big emotionally going on for them too. So usually we talk about greeting our dogs neutrally, naturally. We don't want to make a big deal out of it. We just keep things nice and cool. Hey, bud, how you doing? How you feeling? Do you want to go outside and have a potty break? Nice to see you. And then we can kind of deal with what happened. Okay, do we have repairs to do? Do we have to do a check and make sure that they haven't injured themselves? You know, when they do something like trying to actually get through a door, we really want to check, you know, did you cut up your gums? Did you rip out any nails? Or are you okay? So greeting them as calm as you can, keeping it neutral as possible, doing a little check to make sure that they're okay, that they're not injured, assessing the damage, and then starting to develop a little bit of a plan where we go, okay, clearly there's something going on and we need to get a little bit of help for this one. But I have to say, Holly, I love that you noticed that there was something going on with him just by that Kong. Where you're right, you know, dogs will often not eat if they're stressed. And it is such a great sign, but a really subtle one to, you know, where a lot of guardians might not know that piece about stress and may just think, oh, that's weird. You didn't eat your Kong. Oh, you were saving it for later. Or, you know, it might not mean anything to a lot of people that don't have that deeper understanding into what stress can do to the body. So I think it's really, really significant that you were able to get a little bit of heads up that, hey, maybe there's something going on here. And it's such an important little tidbit because it is something that happens to a lot of dogs. So I think it's great that you mentioned that.
Yeah, of course, with me, I felt guilty because I thought, man, if I had done something when I noticed it at first, maybe I could have prevented that big situation that, of course, I'm like this empathic person that visualizes everything. So just that scene of what must have happened to that poor dog to make him do something like that. And then I also felt bad because when I came home, I was mad. I didn't yell at him. I didn't do anything in front of him, but I was mad, really mad. And then I had to remind myself, Holly, dude, you've had panic attacks before. You've never been alone. You've had somebody to talk you down and he was all by himself. And I don't know if you are wondering, but I have three dogs, and the other two would come with us because Grizz was afraid of car rides. He still doesn't like it. He's a special, special dog. And I have to say, I've had him since he was 6 weeks old, so nothing major happened to cause any of this. But I was always under the understanding that he had a preference to stay home. So that's what we did. We took the other two to work, and he stayed home. So, of course, all that guilt started to kind of stream in, and wondered if I could have done something to maybe prevent it. But it sounds like, based on what we've discussed already, that there was probably already some stuff that had happened previous to even me noticing. So I know, I guess maybe we can't beat ourselves up too much, but once we know, try to just do something about it, I suppose.
That's exactly it, right? With so many things in life, we can have a big moment that really shakes us and opens our eyes to something. And that's where we kind of put in those little pieces of the puzzle where we look back and go, oh, there was this sign and this sign and this sign. But in those moments, you know, we certainly don't pick up on the potential severity of the situation. I mean, if I could operate like that, there are some decisions I've made in my life that would have turned out way better. So totally beating ourselves up over things like that, all it does is make us feel bad, where it doesn't, you know, it doesn't fix the situation. It just, we can look at it as extra information on how we can make a plan and move forward with them.
And that's kind of what I initially did. Because being in the pet industry for a while, I've seen this with other people. And this was always something that I thought, you know, I can deal with this problem. Picky eating, maybe sore joints. I can deal with all of these kind of problems, but I sure hope I never get a dog with separation anxiety. And then, bam! Nope, you get one. But I always figured that life kind of gives you what you can handle and what you need to learn. So here we are. But I think I almost answered this question already, but I know a lot of people, when they come into the store and they describe what's going on with their dogs, and obviously I'm not a dog trainer, but I have a dog with this, so I can kind of recognize some of the signs. So I might say to them, you know, that sounds like separation anxiety. You should go speak to somebody and work with somebody to work this out, because this is a hard thing to do alone. You absolutely need a plan. But what a lot of people, their knee-jerk reaction is kind of like, well, I'll just get another dog because they're lonely. They don't want to be alone. So will this fix the problem? And what are your thoughts on that? Does this help at all?
I totally understand where that thought comes from. And unfortunately, it doesn't fix it. In the great majority of cases, it doesn't do anything to fix it. And there's certain situations too that adding another dog would actually make things worse as well. So there's certainly been, you know, a few cases here and there, of course, where a dog's anxiety has been relieved by having a buddy around, but it wouldn't be a good reason to get a second dog. Where if as a family you really want a second dog because you want a second dog, then sure, for sure, but not as a solution for separation anxiety, because in the great majority of situations, it doesn't do anything to alleviate the anxiety and has that potential to make it worse. Let's say the second dog maybe barks out the window at something, and that can trigger a response in the dog who's experiencing anxiety. Or maybe it is a puppy that we've brought in and it learns this is what we do when we're alone. It's really scary. And now we have two. So as a solution for separation anxiety, it's not a good one. So I'm not against people getting a second dog, but I want it to be for the right reasons. We're getting another dog because we just really want another dog in our family, not because we want this dog to help our dog who's suffering from separation anxiety.
That makes sense. It's when you're describing this, I'm almost thinking of when people having marital problems decide to have a baby thinking it'll fix their marriage, and it never does. So, but I guess the goal would be that, and I was going to ask you if you think that it would actually create a problem in the second dog because they're very often looking up to the older dog to how to grow up and behave as a canine. So that would be my biggest worry, I suppose. And I guess you kind of confirmed that that's a possibility that could happen. So it's best to work out the kinks with the first one before you think about a second one. Mm-hmm. Plus, if you have this thing to work through, maybe the time should be better spent on kind of helping that dog rather than raising a second puppy and kind of creating more work for yourself. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a lot of work on separation anxiety, a lot of work to raise a dog. So you definitely want to make sure that the reasons for bringing in that dog are just expanding the family, not for anything else. Yeah.
That's a good reason to get a dog anytime. You should always make sure of that anytime. So yeah, that's good. I like that. Like me looking back and wondering if there's anything I could have done to prevent this, is there stuff like, let's say somebody gets a new puppy and they're like, okay, I really don't want to deal with this problem later. And of course we can't control all of those factors that you said could be contributors. But if we wanted to do our best to kind of have a dog that feels comfortable and safe at home, is there some little things like that we can work on in day-to-day life with these new dogs that might help maybe prevent them from turning into a separation anxiety case later down the road?
I love this because prevention is so powerful in so many ways. And while we can't, of course, 100% guarantee that there's a preventative strategy for separation anxiety, I mean, we absolutely can boost our chances. When we get, a new dog or a new puppy, there's usually a couple areas that we focus on. We want to do house training right away, and we want to do socialization. But I really think that there should be a third area, which is alone training, where the ability to cope on their own should be just as important as house training, as socialization. And we can do things when we first bring a new dog or a new puppy home, like playing games like peekaboo. So just like you would do with a baby, where maybe I have a toy and it disappears for a second and it comes back. So we're showing that object permanence, where we're maybe popping out of view just behind the wall and we come back. And it's really fun and it's lighthearted, and we're starting to show our new dog that sometimes you can't see us, but we're always here. We always come back. And then we look at things like doing really gradual, safe, short absences. And this would be whether you're bringing home a new puppy, whether you're bringing in an adult dog. You want to make sure that, you're not bringing home a dog on Saturday afternoon and expecting to go to work for the full day on Monday. It's not a good plan. We want to take our time and focus on this. So we look at short little absences. I'm going to pop outside the door and I'm going to come right back. I'm teaching my dog that I might disappear, but always come back. And I really think it's a good idea, too, to have video of this with your dog. So one of the things that's so hard about separation anxiety is when it's happening, we're not there. So we can't give them feedback. We can't see exactly what's going on. So video is really, really valuable to really understand what's happening with your dog. So set up like a little Zoom call with your dog and take one device with you out the door and watch them while you stand out there for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, a minute. See what they do. Are they pacing? Do they look worried? Do they whine? And if you see those signs of stress coming back right away and making that understanding that I need to work on this a little bit, we need maybe shorter absences. So we always make a promise to dogs that I'm never going to leave you alone longer than you can comfortably handle. And I think that that goes for bringing a new dog home just as much as it goes for learning that we have a separation anxiety dog and putting a plan in place, where I think that rule should apply across the board. I'm never going to leave you alone for longer than you can handle. And that way we're not experiencing scary absences. We're having just good, safe, easy absences, and that can help build that skill for them.
There's a lot of people that might be saying, well, I have to go to work the next day. So for them, what are some things you can do? I'm so lucky because I have an office right next to my store. So I can bring my dogs, and I've gotten through the last 2 years not leaving them. And it's not been easy even for me. So if you're working a full-time job downtown, what are some things people can do to, while they're working on this, while things are getting better? And I know that you mentioned this, and this is something that I've heard before, that you have to kind of break the separation, I guess, come home or come back in the room before that panic sets in. So if you're not home, what can you do?
Yeah, one of the first things that we talk about with any new family experiencing separation anxiety with their dog is that the first thing we need to do is we have to suspend all absences. And it's hard. How do you do that and balance a job, a social life, getting groceries, Mm-hmm. So typically one of the first things we do is we look at how can I build a support village for my dog? What are all of the different, just doing some brainstorming, what are all of the different places that my dog can go, people that they can visit that will help to suspend these absences? Can we enlist the help of the neighbor or a friend? Do I have a family member that works from home that's fine hanging out with my dog for the day? Can we bring in a pet sitter, or is my dog a good candidate for daycare? Maybe your dog does okay for absences that are about 2 hours, but not good beyond that. So you can look at having maybe a dog walker come in a couple times a day or potty breaks. So it sort of depends on how much the dog can handle, but really looking at those around you, the services around you, the people in your life, and seeing if you can develop a bit of a support village for them so that there's always options, so that it's not all on you, which is nice because it's a lot of pressure for sure. Mm-hmm. And just so that you've got lots of options to help your dog feel okay when you're not there.
Yeah, it's nobody's ever really claimed that this is an easy journey. It definitely mm-hmm. takes a lot of patience and dedication. And I feel silly sometimes when I say I can't do XYZ unless I can confirm a sitter for my dog. And being that I'm a small business owner that works 7 days a week, this is a challenge for me to even work on. So I know I sympathize with people out there, and I can relate to it. But I don't want people to get scared off, because one thing I know is that somebody like yourself, you specialize in separation anxiety training. So if somebody enlists you to help, you're going to help with that plan, I would assume, right? Like, here's some ideas, like look in these places, and then this is what I want you to try, and these are the tools you should have. And you're going to be there as the support for not even necessarily the dog, but the person helping the dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Where when we're working with a family, it is all of that. It's not just working on the dog feeling okay alone. It's working on helping develop a plan so that it's achievable, it's doable, it's accessible to everyone, and helping with that brainstorming. When you do work with separation anxiety every day, you get pretty creative at finding ways to help, you know, prevent a dog from being alone. So it is a big part of my job to make sure that we can talk and brainstorm together and come up with multiple ways to keep that dog feeling safe. And that, so that it's not just all on the dog guardian, for sure.
Is this something you even think that a pet parent could even do on their own? Or is it pretty, once you've discovered you have this issue, is it pretty understood that you need to go find somebody to help you?
For the most part, I think it is really important to find someone who specializes in separation anxiety and can help you, just because it is a bit of a heavy topic. It does feel pretty big when you're tackling it. I absolutely think that some people could do it on their own with the right resources and with the right maybe family support or community support to help. but you're definitely going to get a lot further when you've got someone who understands the ins and outs of it, knows, you know, the ups and downs, because it's not all smooth sailing. And to have someone with you, helping you, and someone who understands. As you know, when you finally get to, my dog can do 12 seconds by themselves, not a lot of people out there are going to cheer with you. I'm going to cheer with you. That's such an amazing thing. Like, we're in double digits, you know? So just having someone with you on that journey who truly understands what you're going through, it can be worth it just for that. So I really do recommend that people seek professional help with it because it's heavy, but there are resources. If seeking professional help is something that isn't achievable for someone or isn't attainable, then there are other resources to help and at least start to move things in a positive direction.
At least gives you something, you know, a goal, somewhere to work towards. Because yeah. I tell you, when you come home to that destroyed door frame, you're just like, what now? Like, really, what's tomorrow going to – what do I do tomorrow? Where am I going to take him? Is he going to stay home? Is he going to do this again? Is he going to hurt himself next time? So just having the support, I think, is invaluable. And, in fact, anytime I've hired a professional dog trainer, there's a lot of things that I already knew myself. And this goes with nutrition, too, which is my background, that I don't think about – in my own situation. It's almost like having your own coach. You might be really amazing at business, and maybe you're even coaching other people at business. But when it's yours, sometimes it doesn't even occur to you, these certain things that you've been telling people all this time. So just to have, like, I'd almost look at you as a coach, because I'd be like, look what I did. And you could be proud of me and excited that we had this challenge, like the 12 seconds or whatever it was. But, yeah. It's invaluable to, and even to have you say you know, do this. And I go, well, duh, I knew that, but I didn't do it. Like, it's very helpful. So I would highly suggest, and I would like to do this myself one day, maybe when we have some staff and really tackle this issue with Grizz. Like I said, fortunately I can bring him with me, but that's not an option for everybody. So very often you need to work on this right away. And if somebody is seeking a trainer to help, should a trainer have any special qualifications, or can any dog trainer tackle this topic?
Yeah, separation anxiety is a pretty specialized area. And just because it doesn't operate the same way training most behaviors does, it's, you know, it works different. You're not there during the behavior. So I used to really dread separation anxiety cases before I decided to specialize in it. Just because of that, it didn't follow the same rules of training that so many other behaviors follow. And I was finding that we just couldn't get the success that I wanted for students because of that. So once I specialized in it and I went back to school for it, it's such a unique way of working through a behavior that I really think finding someone who specializes in it will be invaluable. It'll be so much faster, so much clearer than a general trainer. And some general trainers will absolutely have some great information on separation anxiety and can help. But if it is something where that is your main behavior concern, I'd be looking for someone that specializes in it, because it just seems to operate a little bit different because you're not there when the behavior is happening.
I kind of was thinking that myself. And even you mentioned something earlier about watching your dog on a camera and when they start to panic to get back in. And then I wondered right away, is that going to encourage the dog to keep on doing that, right? Because it made you come back. Because in other aspects of training, that's kind of what we look at, right? Like, you've just reinforced that behavior. So is it different in that case because this dog is having like a panic attack or whatever you want to call it, and it's not really thinking or being or trainable even in that moment of time?
That's exactly it. Where when we're looking at an anxiety behavior, it's not a cognitive choice. Our dogs aren't sitting there going, ha, 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 I know how to get them to come back. when it's coming from a place of panic, there's no thought behind it. It's just emotion. It's just worry. It's just fear. So by our coming back to that, it doesn't reinforce the fear. It stops the panic. And that's what we really want to focus on. It's really unlikely that it would increase your dog's panic at all, because that's not what it's about. That's not the why. The why isn't, I'm going to do something naughty to make you come back. It's, I am suffering, I'm hurting, I'm afraid, I'm panicking. So us coming back just stops that panic, stops it from happening, reassures our dog. It'd be like if you were having a panic attack, Holly, and I was like, I'm not gonna soothe you until you finish your crying or whatever, right? Me coming in and giving you a big hug isn't going to make you have more panic attacks because it was reinforced. It's going to help, hopefully, to alleviate some of that anxiety, some of that panic, and help you feel a little bit better, make the scary thing stop.
I totally agree. And this is something that's come up in arguments before. About a great example is this dog that I have with anxiety, separation anxiety, also has noise phobias. And I know this isn't unlikely that this anxiety stuff kind of can be a package deal. But when I'm looking into how to deal with that, people are saying, well, if you coddle them or comfort them during a thunderstorm, you're going to encourage it. And I'm like, I call bullshit on that, because I've had a panic attack.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to be in that state. This is not a rewarding state to be in. Even if you are getting comforted, the emotion, the overwhelm, the fear, all of that. And then you have physiological reaction to it as well. Your heart speeds up. Like, nothing about it feels good. So nobody's going to say, hey, I'm going to feel like absolute crap, so maybe somebody will come back in the room or give me a hug or whatever. But the only thing that really helps me is when Ron actually grabs my hands and he says, breathe, breathe, breathe. And he gets me in a rhythm where I'm breathing and I'm coming back into my brain. So it's good to kind of have that experience, as much as it sucks, that you can say, like, that's not what's happening with my dog. Like, you're not going to make him want to be scared more. There's no, nothing fun about it. So, so I think that's good that we kind of touched on that topic, because I think that's a bit of a myth, I guess, that's actually going to make it worse. So I'm glad we touched on that. Another thing we have in our store is people will frequently come in and they will ask for just like a calming supplement or something that they think is going to kind of just put a Band-Aid on this. Have you had any experiences? We'll touch on medication in a bit, but have you had any experiences with different supplements? CBD comes up a lot because people tend to think CBD is a cure-all for everything. And while it has many benefits that I've seen with my own eyes, is it something that can actually help with this particular problem?
Maybe. So with supplements and with CBD oil, I mean, anecdotally, there's certainly loads of people out there who have experienced some positive benefits, some reduction in anxiety with their dogs. But the challenge with it is there's not enough research yet to really know, is there a measurable effect? And so when we're looking at a behavior that is as intense or as serious as separation anxiety, that's not typically where I'd want to start with someone. I don't want someone to have to go through, you know, all of these different supplements and hope that it's going to work, or all of these different things and hope that it's going to work. We want to look at things that we know will work for them. So it doesn't mean that some of the calming supplements and CBD oil won't help. It just means that we can't say for sure that it's going to solve the problem. So if someone does want to give it a try, for sure, and I really hope that it has some effect on that dog, but it's not something that I know is going to have a measurable difference for the dog. We just don't have the research on it quite yet.
We don't. And that you have to also consider that with all of these options, and believe me, there's a lot, even in our little store, one of those things might work amazing for dog A, but not do anything for dog B. So it ends up being one of these things where you really just have to start somewhere and then give it a go for a few weeks. Nothing. Try another one. And I kind of look at these things as being maybe something supplementary to the behavior modification that you're working on with them, because I know that I've never seen it solve anything, but for myself, I almost explain to people, it's almost like you took a deep breath and it just took you down a few pegs. It didn't fix you, but it took you down a few pegs. So that might work for some, it might not, but I don't think it's a solution, a band-aid that can just be slapped on it. And this is what I have to explain a lot to people is I wish I had a magic thing, a magic pill, but we really don't. And hopefully there will be more research on this in the future, because if there could be a dose or a certain, I don't know, particular one that might work over something else, and at least it gives us tools. But like you said, at this time, we just don't have that knowledge. So it's kind of a gamble.
Yeah, it really is. And it doesn't mean that it might not help. You know, it might, but exactly that. I wouldn't put all of my eggs in that basket for sure.
Totally agree. And if the dog is to the point where it's so bad that quality of life is becoming an issue and maybe they can't train through this fast enough to give the dog some relief, can a person look at medications that maybe they can get from their veterinarian? And if this is something they're looking at, should they seek out a veterinarian that specializes in this? Or is it like with training, they have some base knowledge, but there's ones that specialize in it? And if so, what should somebody be looking for?
So most dogs with separation anxiety do much better on medication. So I don't typically use it as like a last resort. Usually I want that to be one of the first approaches. So it's not, you know, a behavior modification plan and a training plan or medication. It's both is going to give that dog its best chance of being successful. So the medication sort of supports the dog's ability to work through the stuff we're doing. And then the stuff we're doing is helping them to move forward. It really works best together. So it's something that we'll often do right at the beginning rather than as a last resort. And most vets will be knowledgeable enough on anti-anxiety medications to help a guardian out. But I also want to make sure that people know it's okay to get a second opinion. If your dog is suffering from separation anxiety, you've watched them on camera, you've seen them stressed, they've eaten your door frame, or, you know, you've got complaints from the neighbors that they're just crying the entire time, and your vet says, no, I don't know, let's try something else first. Get a second opinion, where it is so beneficial to do medication with the behavior training plan, where we tend to see much more success that way. So it's something that I actually really encourage people to do versus waiting to see if we can do it without.
Over time with the behavior modification, do you find that some dogs can go off the medication, or is this something that's maybe now a permanent kind of fixture in their life, is just taking the meds to kind of get them through life?
Totally dog dependent, where some dogs will find that the medication really, really helps them just to cope with the different stressors in life. Some dogs learn that, hey, you know what? I'm actually totally okay on my own, and we can look at reducing that medication or removing it altogether. And all of that medication piece would be under the guidance of their vet. But so it's really dog dependent on that one. So much like us, right? Where when we're working, you know, on our own anxieties and traumas, and we have our medication and we're going to our therapy appointments, and sometimes we can do medication adjustments. Sometimes we have a much better and much easier life when we do have that support on the medical side throughout. So similar.
It's true. And then throw in that maybe life threw you some curveballs and maybe it made it extra hard to struggle for that or get through in that little bit of time. And maybe you were doing great, but these curveballs kind of threw you over the edge. And that could be the same for your dog. Maybe you moved, somebody moved out, somebody moved in. all of these things, a medical issue, a health issue. So it's really crazy how individualized this whole thing is. And that's why I think it's so important to have somebody like yourself come and just observe and say, this is what I think is going on with this dog.
Yeah.
I think it's very helpful to have that. I am sure there are tons of myths out there about separation anxiety. And I'm wondering if you would like to take this opportunity to maybe debunk some of them.
Oh, I sure would, Holly. So I have five that I decided would be good ones for us to debunk today. So the first one I'll often see on like Facebook groups or things like that, where someone will mention, hey, I think my dog might have some separation anxiety. And one of the things that I see over and over again as advice is that you need to crate them. And so this is our first myth that we're going to debunk, that crates will fix anxiety. And they don't. So crates have some great benefit for different behaviors, different life stages with dogs. But when it comes to fixing separation anxiety, they're probably not going to do it. So most dogs, I shouldn't say most, but many dogs that have separation anxiety also have confinement anxiety. So we'll see dogs who are maybe showing their separation anxiety in a crate. They're, you know, scratching at the crate, destroying the crate to try to escape. And we decide to take them out of the crate and we see that their anxiety is much less. It might still be there, but it's lessened. So when we take a dog who's already panicking and then shove them into this tiny little box, for a lot of dogs, it makes it worse. It just might be that we don't see the results of it as much because there isn't destroyed things or, you know, or piles of pee everywhere or something like that. So it doesn't do anything to actually address the anxiety and it might make it worse. And there's even things called anxiety crates, which sound like, oh, this is the thing for me. But really, an anxiety crate is just a really strong crate. So it's going to be much harder for your dog to get out of when they're panicking. So again, doesn't fix or address the anxiety part of it. So putting your dog in a crate does not fix separation anxiety. So our next myth that we're going to debunk, we kind of talked about it already, that letting our dogs cry it out or letting them bark it out is going to fix the anxiety, because that myth is if you come back when your dog is crying, you're going to reinforce that behavior, that anxiety. And we talked about that a little bit earlier, and that one is also not true. Where that crying or that barking is just a symptom of that fear, and stopping that fear from happening doesn't reinforce it. It just makes them feel better. So letting them cry it out is likely to not work and has the potential to, of course, make it much worse because they're continuing to stress, continuing to panic. Our next myth is that ignoring your dog when you come home will prevent them from getting separation anxiety or fix the problem, because coming home isn't exciting anymore. And when we ignore them, we're taking the, you know, all of the energy out of it. So that'll make it so that our dogs aren't as anxious when we're gone. But that one, also not true, where especially if we have a dog who's suffering from isolation distress, we finally come home and we totally ignore them. Like, you can imagine if your partner came home, you had a bad day, and Ron comes home and is like not engaging with you at all. Not going to make you feel better.
No. Right?
Where again, now we've got, what's wrong? Are you mad at me? Is something going on? So it doesn't change it either. Usually I just like people to come home, be neutral, be natural. Hey, bud, how was your day? We don't have to be crazy over the top, but ignoring them isn't going to help the situation either. So this one I think is one of my favorites, and I'll see this all the time, is that letting your dog sleep on your bed causes separation anxiety. And so this kind of comes from the idea that our dogs being with us all of the time might make it difficult for them to be alone. It also can come from the idea of pack theory and all of that. As we know, of course, dominance theory and things have been debunked many, many, many times, but there are little strings of that theory that still infiltrate the dog world. And one of them is that having your dog in your bed can be a cause for that. And I'll see this from trainers all the time, that that's one of their first little bits of advice. Does your dog sleep in your bed? Well, you need to get them to stop sleeping in your bed so that you're apart. But if we look at dogs, dogs are social sleepers. They love to sleep with others, whether it's other dogs, whether it's us. You know, if you went and picked out your puppy, you can bet that they were probably snoozing in a pile at some point where it's just part of being a dog. So sleeping in your bed is not going to create separation anxiety. If you like to cuddle with your dog, keep those cuddles going. It's not going to affect that at all. It's not going to create any anxiety when you leave the house. So I find that one fantastic because I am a big fan of having a good cuddle and snooze with my dog.
Same here. I can't even imagine. Like sometimes I get really confused at some of the advice that's out there about don't talk to your dog. Don't look at your dog. Don't pay attention to your dog. Don't let them sleep on your bed. Don't let them on your furniture. Don't let them walk out the door before you. And there's all these rules. And it's like, who the hell even wants a dog after they're basically getting a companion to completely ignore? And it just seems kind of counterintuitive to me. And I'm sure there's people out there that are going to disagree with me on that. But it's almost like, can't we meet them somewhere? You know, they're a dog. They have these needs too. And can't we meet them somewhere? So why push them out of the room and make them do something that's against their nature? We want to enrich their lives. We want them to feel happier and better, and letting them be dogs is kind of the best way to do that. So it's good to hear that those things aren't going to encourage these problems, and I'm glad you've debunked some of that stuff. One that I know I heard as well quite a lot was give them a food toy, and we've already kind of debunked that through this conversation too, because if they're so stressed they don't want food, it's not going to fix anything. In fact, that's another thing that in training works really well, but in this case has mixed kind of results. So it really is like, and the more I've talked to you about it, the more you realize that it's not, you kind of always apply all the same rules. It's kind of different. It's almost more psychological, a lot more of a psychological angle to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really do think it's so important that, you know, you mentioned the food again too, because some dogs won't eat, of course, just like Grizz. Some dogs will eat, but then what happens is they finish the food toy, then the panic sets in. So, you know, using a food toy to help cure your separation anxiety, it's not going to help because that panic still comes. That food toy is not likely to last 8 hours, you know? And if it does, it's probably kind of a crummy food toy. I'm like, that sounds frustrating to take 8 hours to try to get it out. We typically don't use food at all in separation anxiety training.
Yeah, that's crazy. That totally goes not against, but it's totally different than regular training, because I know that you do use it in your regular training. So that's where it's good to kind of seek somebody out that kind of has a little bit more of a knowledge on this particular situation that can help you out. And are there any resources that our listeners could check out to maybe learn more about separation anxiety, or even find a trainer that maybe has a bit more knowledge or a specialty in this area?
Absolutely. So there are some books and some podcasts that can be good resources for people. So my mentor is Julie Naismith. She has a really wonderful podcast that people can listen to. I hope it's okay to plug another podcast on your
podcast. Absolutely. I know Julie as well, so we will definitely plug her.
Yeah, and it's really helpful. It has so much good information about it. And it is, you know, it's a free and available resource. So if someone is wondering, does my dog have separation anxiety, or just trying to just sort some things out a little bit, it can be a nice way just to get a bit of an understanding. She also has a book, Be Right Back, that goes into a lot of separation anxiety stuff as well. So those are some really nice at-home resources that someone can do. You can also look up for like a separation anxiety specialist, so an SA Pro trainer through Julie Naismith's training, or a CSAT trainer through Milena DiMartini's training. All of those professionals really, really understand separation anxiety, and all of those professionals can help. They're going to work with you on a really frequent basis. Sometimes I wonder if we're a little bit annoying with how much we check in and make sure things are going okay. And they're going to really walk you through it, be that coach, be that cheerleader. So those would be the two main kind of certifications that I would look for if I'm looking for a professional. One of the cool things too about looking for a separation anxiety professional is that you don't necessarily have to find one in your area, where you might live in a place that doesn't have a huge pool of professional dog trainers. All separation anxiety is done virtually. And it's done virtually because we can't be in the house when the dog is working on alone training. So we're a little fly on the wall, watching everything through a little camera to see how the dog is coping, building the plans according to what they can handle. So it makes it so accessible. No matter where you are, someone can help you.
That's amazing. And then people don't even need to commit as much time if they're having somebody come over or if they're going to meet them somewhere. Doing this online can really save time and potentially give you more check-ins. So you can kind of touch base more often. And on that note, does that mean that they can find you and you can help them out if they live somewhere else in the world?
Absolutely. We can set up sessions absolutely anywhere. All of our sessions are over Zoom. So as long as you've got a camera and a mic and a screen, we can set up a session and we can work through the separation anxiety. So people can find me at our website, which is dogwittraining.com. And I'm sure Holly will pop that into the show notes. And yes, our social media is at Dogwit Training Inc. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram for lots of pictures of a really old dog and also some separation anxiety tips and information too.
That's awesome. How is my favorite old guy doing anyway?
He's doing really, really well. We were at the vet 2 weeks ago and they had this chart on the wall that was your dog's weight and their age. And it kind of give you, this is what, according to their weight, what they would be in human years. And our boy is 100 years old.
Wow, that's crazy. And he still comes to visit us at the pet store.
Yes, he does. He still wears his super sneakers that Ron helped him find. So he wears them all the time to just help protect his paws from his mobility challenges. So everybody always points out, oh, those are nice sneakers. Yeah,
that's awesome. And you can see lots of his action and his adventures on your social media as well. I know you still take him hiking and you guys spend a lot of time together. You're best buddies. So I think that's really awesome. So this has been a really great conversation. I have learned tons and I'm going to keep this in mind. Like, part of the reason why I haven't really acted on anything yet is because time is always my challenge. But I love the idea that you can do this virtually. So this is something I'm going to have to maybe start working on with my Grizzy man. And hopefully we can make things a little bit better. And maybe I can go do something like eat at a restaurant.
Right? And Holly, though, you have done something. You have absolutely done the first step, which is suspend absences. It's so important. So you are doing exactly what you need to do to help him. You're making sure that he's not in a position to panic. And it's such a big piece of the puzzle. So you are working on it. You're doing it.
Oh, thank you. See, you guys, you can give Dre a call and she can be your coach too. I feel better already.
And Holly, we had one more myth that we didn't get to. Oh, and what? I think it's a really nice thing to close on too. And it's the myth is that you did something to cause your dog's anxiety. And you didn't. We can really beat ourselves up when we see our dogs struggling or suffering, or we see things like the destruction, or we're sitting there with the carpet cleaner, you know, cleaning up a mess for the 300th time. And we can really get into our heads and think that we did something wrong. You didn't. You didn't. Everything just kind of happens. And all we can do is move forward. And that's the really good news about separation anxiety. We might not know what causes it, but we sure know how to fix it.
And we don't always have those clear answers with everything in life. So that's really encouraging. So thank you so much again, Dre, for your time. What a wonderful chat. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Holly.
Thank you. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you loved this episode, please subscribe and share with your dog-loving friends. The information in this podcast is not intended to replace veterinary care. Always consult with your veterinarian for diagnosis and treatment of your pup.